Hi, everybody. This is the Tech Art Jam Microcast from Rigging Dojo. I'm your host, Chad Moore. Thanks for joining us on our third episode. I'm excited to keep this train a-rolling. Wanted to talk a little bit about some of the things that are happening around Rigging Dojo. In our newsletter, last newsletter, there was an interview with Isabella Chang. We pushed that out to our blog as well, so you can check it out there. It was a really great interview. Thanks for your time, Isabella. I particularly liked hearing her talk about the balance of reusing animations via in-game retargeting and the opposing force of that, which would be, you know, you're removing some uniqueness from the multiple characters because a lot of characters are moving the same. Size and proportion and gait can make those animations look different, but it's curious to hear her discuss that. I don't think there's really a lot of discussion about that outside of within companies, of course, are discussing that, and maybe at GDCs and whatnot, but point me to resources if other people are talking about that. I'd love to hear more about it. I have experience there, with both runtime and in terms of like retargeting through the production process with motion capture and keyframe. It's always interesting. Love to hear your thoughts on it. Because at the end of the day, you have an animation budget and it's not enough, just like any budget. Couple other things happening. Brad tweeted out two really interesting things if you're more technically inclined when dealing with your user interfaces. The first being there's a new system called Dash within Maya. And if you're in the channel box and you right click, you can, you can grab a Dash window. And it's a little script editor that lets you basically manipulate values with a small little dash language and some of the random functionality of Python. Somewhere dug deep in there, and it's in the Instagram post, which I'll have in the notes, there's a link to the actual JSON file that controls the dash commands that you can use, which is really cool because you'll be able to extend it. So that's really a helpful, quick way to deal with numbers. Another way to deal with numbers quickly is the plus equals or plus or minus equals. I don't really know if there's a better name for this functionality within the Maya. Any numerical field, your attribute editor, your numerical input fields in your dope sheet, and your graph editor and the skin weights editor, amongst others, you can, if there's a value inside that box, you can type plus equals 5, for argument's sake, and you'll increase that value by the number after the equal sign. You can do multiply, you can do divide, you can do plus equals, all the basic math operations. And I think you can even do percentage-based, so it's really neat. Check that out. That's on our Facebook page. Again, links will be in the notes. Moving on to some things happening around the industry. I forget exactly where I came across this feed, but I came across small tutorials from an artist named Dennett Beatty, and I believe she had worked on Monument Valley. Sorry, the name of the game just escaped me. Anyway, on her website, dennettbeatty.com/my-process, and again, link in the show note. She has some really fast tutorials about mostly on the modeling and shading side, but they're quick and they're great and really interesting to see, you know, someone solving problems in a specific way. My favorite one she had up there was doing an outline shader without a shader. She would basically duplicate the shape, scale it up a bit, flip the normals, and flood the vertex colors, which is a really neat way to just get an outline. And of course, you can run that through a deformer if you wanted to get, you know, toon shady wiggles and whatnot on there. But that was a really clever, you know, simple technique. Oftentimes, we overthink things, and that was a really nice way to solve that problem. Digging a little deeper into more complex technical issues. Ryan Porter, a friend of the Rigging Dojo, is exploring some ways to rig a very complex model. You can follow his exploits on the hashtag CuriosityRiggedTheCat on Twitter or on his website yantor3d.wordpress.com. YANTOR3D. .wordpress.com. Really interesting to see how he's dealing with these limitations of the model. It's a very robotic model, so things have to move in specific ways, and he's trying to figure out the best way to rig things to achieve the movements that one would want as an animator, but keep the rig and himself sane. So that's a really interesting challenge. You should follow along with that. Really cool stuff. So the time for the questions. I had asked the question of the week was what should be more predictable but isn't? And Ryan Griffin, a longtime friend of Ring Dojo, he's done a bunch of classes for us through on-demand and mentorships, especially around Python. He's got an answer that I wanted to run by everybody. He's got an audio answer, and then I'll respond. And then a couple other people answered briefly via Twitter, so we'll address that too. And then I have an answer as well. So here's Ryan Griffin's answer to be, what should be more predictable but isn't?
Hey there, Rigging Dojo. So the question this week is, what should be more predictable but isn't? One of the topics on my mind lately is collaboration. It seems to me there should be predictable ways to get teams to collaborate, both across varying disciplines and within a discipline. So I'd like to get your thoughts on that.
Great question to the question. Ryan, what should be more predictable but isn't? And Ryan asks, it's multi-pronged. Collaboration is the header, but within a discipline and across a discipline. Man, I mean, we could talk about this for a long time. So let's start within the discipline. I'd start with knowing your team and what they all need in terms of what they all need for the ability to do the work in terms of environment, distractions, reducing all that, and really just trying to understand their mindset when it comes to approaching work and what their preferred inputs and outputs are. That's a short answer to a large topic, but I would start there or explore that more if you've already started. I particularly am a fan of the enable to be able to do deep work and collaborate well. You need to be free of distractions as much as possible. So maybe it's just because I'm getting old and can't think about two things at the same time, but I think that's true for a lot of the teams I've worked on. So I would start there, looking at that. And across the discipline, across disciplines rather, technical art rigging is a really service-oriented job. You're creating something for someone else to use. So get to know them a little bit in terms of what their inputs and outputs are, how they like to receive information and how they like to give information, both for people upstream from you and downstream from you. Modeling is upstream and generally, and animation downstream generally. So I'd start there. Take a look at some of that. I'd love to talk more about this. So if there's a follow-up to this, send us an audio or an email, and we'll keep talking about it. Collaboration is a really interesting topic where our businesses are founded upon it. We need to know what the model is going to do and how it's going to do it, and of course, when's it coming and all that other stuff, and what formats. And of course, we need to provide usable software for our animators to use. I do believe rigs are software. Speaking of rigs software, I put out the tweet, what should be more predictable, what isn't. But Raphael Fragapane, excuse me, the Jocko, twitter.com/the Jocko, whose Cult of Rig is absolutely fantastic, and talked about rigs are software, I think in the last episode or one or two back. He answered animators. So not sure if he's how serious he is, if he's kidding around, or I'm just trying to poke fun or whatnot. But if that's a real concern, if your animators are not predictable, I would suggest talking to them more, and not just talking to them like, hey, did you watch Game of Thrones, but talking to them in a really specific way. Let me preface that by saying I got involved with user experience as a field when I was in game development as a technical art director. It improved the quality of our tools. It corrected mistakes that I've made. It was really beneficial for me personally and for our team. So I would recommend applying a human-centered, user-centric interview technique. And there's a really basic article on designkit.org, and I'll have the link in the show notes. This allows you to talk to your users, because your animators are your users of the tool you're making, the software you're making, and understand really what they want, where they're coming from, and how you can meet them where they are. It's a really important concept in user experience, meeting your users where they are. So I'll link to that. And again, Raphael, if you have more details or if you're just kidding or whatnot, glad to talk more about it. And anybody else who has the same question about how do I make sure my animators behave predictably or are available or whatever the case may be. I know the from riggers to animators is always an interesting handoff. So let's talk more about that. Also on Twitter, Peter Salmer replied, he's twitter.com/stitched. He replied, schedules. And that's, I'm a project manager by trade now. And that is very true. They can be very unpredictable. We don't have a lot of time left in the podcast, and I could talk about this for a long time as well. But for schedules, one thing to try is abstraction, specifically away from time. How do you plan how long something takes without talking about time? Interesting question. In agile development, there's a process technique called story points. And they fit into a framework, a much larger framework that we don't have time to go into right now, maybe in a future episode. But the story points are a way for the team to estimate work without thinking about how long it's going to take. So what is that abstract unit of measure? Well, it's really just complexity. How complex are these things going to take? Or how complex are they going to be? Excuse me. And once you take a look at all of the things that are in your to-do list, your backlog, and you find one of them and assign it a value. And a lot of people use Fibonacci sequence, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, et cetera, et cetera. You can use t-shirt sizes, small, medium, large, extra large, whatever you want to do. Just standardize the format of the rating and then find one thing in your backlog and give it a rating. And then everything else in your backlog, that rating is based on complexity. And everything else in your backlog is relative to that one. They're called user story, but you can call them tasks, whatever you want to do for now. So that way, when you're planning, you can say, this one is more complex than the last one, so it has to have a higher number. This one is less, so it has to have a lower number. And eventually, what you do is you start tracking how many of those things you can get done over time, and then you come up with a velocity. Our team's velocity, we can do 15 units of complexity over X amount of time. And that gives you a little bit more predictability away from hours, which you can then build into a schedule. I hope that makes sense. I can elaborate much more on that if wanted. Shoot me an email. Let me know. I have a little link in the show notes, too, about how to start estimating with story points. My answer to the predictability question is hiring. I've been on job searches before. I've been a hiring manager before. I've worked with recruiting, both internal, company recruiters, external recruiters that we've hired, and I've worked with recruiters just through LinkedIn and whatnot. So, yeah, hiring is complex. There seems to be a lot of talented people who can't find jobs. There seem to be a lot of talented teams who can't find good candidates. And it's still a puzzle to me. I've been doing this 20 years. I've hired probably, between contractors and full-time people, 100 people maybe, I don't know. And it's always challenging. It's challenging to find good people. So that should be more predictable. Yeah, I know, go find people's websites and go to ArtStation and go here, go there. But it never seems to be a fluid process from the time, through the hiring funnel where you're collecting all the applicants, you're funneling them out based on do they have the skills or not, and then you're funneling them out based on do they have the company fit or not, and et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's not a standardized process, and I think it's therefore not predictable. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that. It's interesting. Lots of teams are looking for people and lots of people are looking for teams. So, how do we be better matchmakers, I guess, at the end of the day? So that's the answer there. I'm going to wrap. I'm going to not pose a new question, but I'd like to leave the last two open because I think there's much more to talk about. So if you want to revisit last week's question, which was, what's the biggest change coming to the industry in the next 2 years? Or this week's question, which was, what should be more predictable but isn't? Send me an audio clip. I'll load you up in the podcast or send an email or a tweet or whatnot. Thanks for your time. Have a great day.